I knew what that moment was. I knew it so well, for it was one I had tried my best to edit out of my precious daydreams. It was a definitive moment, like the one I had been hoping to avoid with Jack. The moment of a knowing, can't pretend anymore diagnosis. Jack's had been a gradual, sinking truth that had still not fully settled. This moment was different. It hit me like a felled redwood giant, and I was powerless to avoid it, just as I was powerless to silence the knowing taunts of my dark daydreams that now screamed, "This is what crisis feels like." Sam had a hole between the chambers of his heart, and one of his valves was severely deformed. This presented a dangerous problem. His heart was pumping blood with too little oxygen. It was a serious condition that could be repaired only through open-heart surgery. But since open-heart surgery was so much more dangerous for newborns, the cardiologist wanted to buy some time, and he sent us home with a list of instructions. This child was not allowed to cry. If he cried too much, he might run out of oxygen, turn blue, and pass out, with potentially catastrophic effects. This child was not allowed to get sick. Yes, yes, winter was almost upon us, and winters in that region are cold and wet, but if he got sick, his heart could get too distressed. This child was not allowed to be around other people, because other people bring their own sicknesses with them. It was an absurd list. We were experienced parents by then, and we knew two ironclad truths about babies. They will cry, and they will get sick. We hardly spoke on that 3-hour drive home. The concoction of shock and fear and confusion was thick. First Jack's impending diagnosis, and now this. At home, we at once became intently aware of our boy's breathing. Any whiff of whimpering set us into a small panic. Pick him up, make him stop, make him happy, don't let him cry, shh, shh. The girls would go stark silent in those moments, hoisting their tiny prayers for their newborn brother, and Jack would go on doing what he always did, playing with the spatulas and humming the melody, "How great is our God. Sing with me, how great is our God." That hopeful anthem was out of place in our kitchen. We knew God was good, but he didn't feel great to us. Not right then. I remember sinking into a callous self-pity under the weight of my double crisis. One boy born with a broken mind, I lamented, and one with a broken heart. But as I said, we were surrounded by family, so I couldn't sink too far. Janae soothed us with the giant hugs for which she is so famous, and George and Karen did their best to keep us laughing. And God was still there, of course. We didn't understand what he was doing, but we knew we were not alone. We would get through this, somehow. Then one bright afternoon, I stepped onto the rocky path toward our ministry office, and Karen was walking toward me, her black curly hair hanging free in all directions like always. But something was different this time. Her face was less placid than usual. "Jason, I need to talk to you." Her expression was careful, apologetic. "What's the matter?" I was on edge now. She took a deep breath. "I found a lump." I felt faint. My head drifted away from her.